Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Windows Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com. This is Windows Weekly with Paul Thurrott, episode 40 for November 16th, 2007. Welcome to the Squirkle. Windows Weekly is brought to you by Audible.com. For your free audiobook, visit audible.com/windows. And by listeners like you. Thanks for your donations. Windows Weekly turns the big 4-0, and it's Paul Thurrott, who is still shy of 40, joining us right now from...
Actually, yeah.
No, you don't have to tell the truth right now.
Yeah, okay.
Paul has been traveling a bit. Where were you last week?
Last week. I was in Seattle last week.
Oh, you go there a lot. You should just move to Seattle.
that's what I'm told.
You live the farthest possible way away. In Dedham.
Except that I'm closer to Europe, and I go to Europe a lot, too.
So
it's kind of a halfway point.
Which would you rather be closer to, Redmond or Europe?
Right. Well, I'm kind of splitting the difference.
I have to tell you, though, your dollar goes a lot longer in Redmond these days.
Yes, it does.
But we won't talk about that painful stuff.
Actually, the dollar's rebounding against the Canadian dollar. I saw that.
Oh, I hate that. Is that true?
Yeah.
That means, I get paid in Canadian dollars, so... I like it.
I don't think you have anything to fear yet, but it is, I guess it's climbed back from its historic low or something.
Oh, dear. It'll sink again. So,
I'm always the optimist.
Yes. So, quite a bit's happened since we last convened. We had a great conversation with Ed Bott, by the way. Thank you, Ed, for that. Today, we have new Zunes.
Zune, Zune, Zune.
Zune, Zune. I like the new Zune. Now, I have to say... The first Zune was a perfect exemplification of Soviet era industrial design.
This is one, exemplification a word?
Yes. Okay. And that's what it was.
Then you're correct.
Now we've gone past the Soviet era. We're not quite to the, you know,
the first Zune was like when you see a Chinese knockoff of an iPod or a Google phone or something.
Now you and I both have the little Zune. We don't have the big one, the 80 gig yet. These are the flash drives. They look a lot, I have to say, almost identical to the last generation iPod, not the current Nano.
The Nano, yeah, the old one.
But the old Nano, yeah.
Yep, I agree. Yeah, but you know, I will say this too, because when that new Nano came out, the one thing I felt like Apple kind of dropped the ball on a little bit is on the low end they have a Shuffle with just a gigabyte of memory, and then they have this Nano, which is, you know, not like it's huge, but I mean, it's kind of a fatter, you know, different looking form factor. And clearly they're pushing the video with that version
of
the player.
It's still small though.
Oh, absolutely. It's not a big device, but I mean, it seems like, you know, the biggest part of the market is actually people who just want music. And it seems like with this one, they've not that they left them behind so much, but they're clearly pushing the other stuff. Right. And I thought that, you know, Apple might, and I think I said this at the time, you know, they might have pursued the pure music player a little better than they did, I think, with this version. And when you look at this Zune, you know, you think, there it is. I mean, it's clearly for music. You can watch a video on it. The screen is, you know, it's nice. It's small, but I mean, clearly this is a music player. You know, it's the type of thing you'll take to the gym.
Yeah. And I have to say, just overall, it feels pretty good. I mean, it's a light years ahead of the original Zune, which I was not a big fan of. This one I might actually use. I gave it to my 13-year-old son to see what he thought of it. He said, tell Paul I like it. It's it passes the 13-year-old test. Now, interestingly, Microsoft's pricing these new Zunes exactly the same as the competing Nanos.
Yeah.
So, which tells me Microsoft says, we're not going to undercut them. We believe we're head-to-head competitive.
That's exactly what I was thinking. You know, without having seen these, one of my criticisms when I had that initial briefing with Microsoft about the Zunes was, well, okay, you're coming up with these devices that are very similar to other Apple iPods, and you're pricing them exactly the same. You're not exactly going gangbusters in the market. Don't you think maybe, you know, undercut them by $10, something like that? And but now when you see it, and by the way, also when you see the reaction, that these have gotten online, you realize, you know, they're onto something here, because this is actually a decent device. It's very competitive.
Yeah.
And they may not have to undercut, which is very interesting.
Well, let's dissect it. I mean, starting with the software, the user interface on the portable device. I mean, this is where Apple really made its a revolution. It was the first MP3 player. I mean, I don't know if you remember when the iPod came out. It was the first MP3 player that had a lot of songs on it that actually you could find the songs and play them. It was usable. And I have to think.
Yeah, well, right. I think that and the size of the device was the big innovations, right?
I think this new Zune software is excellent. I love it.
Yeah. So there's a certain maturity to the interface that wasn't necessarily present last time. You know, one thing, I have sort of mixed feelings on a few things here. I mean, if you look at the main menu now, the text is much bigger and it scrolls off the page. This tells me that the Zune guys have now hit the same user interface issues that the Media Center guys hit, you know, several years ago now, where the first version was very simple.
Right.
You know, five options, let's say, on the main page. It could fit on the screen, no problem. And one of the nice things about that is when you have a small amount of text there, you can have a background image that you can, you know, customize and have a nice photo there, you know, of your family or some favorite place or something. And it's very easy to see. And now, you know, with this bigger text, it's, the background picture is a little harder to see. It's no big deal, but, you know, you can still customize it. But clearly now there's more going on, right? So they've added podcasts, for example, to the main menu.
That's the one word that put it off the edge.
Yeah.
They'd left that off. It would have all fit.
There you go.
I'm happy they did it. I mean, I'm really happy they did it.
Yeah. So the other thing that's going on with the UI, and I'm not sure how familiar you are with this stuff, but, you know, years ago, Microsoft had, in the wake of the original version of Media Center for the PC, had come out with something called the Portable Media Center. And the Portable Media Center actually was the one that began this type of UI where you can scroll up and down through a list, but you can also scroll left and right on the same screen. And it's kind of hard to describe, but I guess the way to say it would be, if you go into music, by default, you're seeing a list of albums. You can scroll up and down through those albums and you can see the little album art, you know, next to each album, but you can also scroll from that screen left and right. And if you scroll right, you'll see a list of artists. You scroll right again, you'll see playlists. You scroll right again, you'll see songs and then genres and then back to albums. So it's got this sort of, I don't know what you call that, a two-dimensional or, you know, you can go horizontal or vertical with the menu. And
once you use it.
It's hard. I don't know that anyone listening to that description will actually understand what that means. But if you consider the way an iPod works, if you go into music and then you go into albums, you know, you have to jump back out. You know, you have to go back up again to get to these other items typically. And this just puts it all. So in other words, when you go into music, you only go one level deep. That's it.
That's all you need
from
to.
There.
Because you can go back and forth
and artists. Because you can just go. Yeah, you can go left and right through all the other things right. that, you know, are under that category. You know, music is the one that has the most of these sort of sub menu headings. You know, obviously, if you go into, you know, video, there's only a few options. You know, there aren't as many as there are with music, pictures, you know, and so forth. Same thing. But this interface, I have to say, it just works really well, you know, just from a software standpoint.
Now,
I think it's pretty.
Let me ask you about the hardware, because they have a squircle.
What do you call it?
It's a squircle.
A squircle?
It's a square circle. I didn't make that up. Microsoft made that up. It's a squircle. And
okay.
On the squircle, you want to get that?
Yeah, I'll get that right.
All right.
Let me just turn that off.
Take the phone call.
You can tell it's been a while since I forgot to turn off the phone.
Yeah, you haven't podcasted in ages.
It was my father-in-law. I'm sure it will.
Oh, you'll hear from him.
I'm sure it will keep.
Oh, you'll hear from him.
So anyway. You say, I was doing a podcast talking about squircles.
So you're actually saying Microsoft told you this was a squircle.
Well, I read this in the Ars Technica review that at Microsoft's PR, people call that a squircle. It's a.
I have to say, I don't like the squircle.
Well, that, and that's the question, because, okay, so it does two things.
I don't like the shape of the squirt.
Okay, but also, you can use it two ways. You can use it as, kind of intuitively, you would think, as a rocker and a clicker, but it also senses finger movement, which I think is really interesting.
I do, too. And actually, I like that a lot. And that works really well.
It's a little sensitive sometimes. Like you try to click and it'll actually move you off the right thing. That bugs me a little bit.
Well, and one of the nice things about it is if you don't like it, you can turn it off.
Right. You don't have to. Have
you know.
But I haven't turned it off because I do like it, especially because it gives you that iPhone style scrolling through your music.
Yes. So if you have a nice big list of music, this is a great way to scroll through it. And, you know, it has that sort of accelerometer effect, you know, as you keep going, it goes faster and faster. And, you know, if you scroll through a text list, like a list of artists, it will display the letter in larger type on the side as you go and all that stuff. It's very, you know, it's very well thought out. It's nice. And I think this answers the big complaint with the previous generation where you had this dial that looked like it might be a scroll wheel. And no, it's actually just a four button rock, you know, just that, four buttons.
That was a big complaint I had with the original Zoom.
Yeah.
You didn't do anything.
I like the functionality. I have to say though, and by the way, the basic layout of the buttons on the Zoom has not changed. You know, there's a back button, there's a play pause button, and then there's the squircle, which is new to me, but I'll work on that one. And they do everything right, you know. So
I'm starting to like squircle.
I know. We have to call this episode squircle.
It's growing on me.
Welcome to the squircle. You know, if you're looking at it in sort of a portrait mode, like you would be in playing music, you know, you press up and down and the volume up and down, you press left and right, it goes back and forward through the song list. If you're watching a video where you might be holding the thing in horizontal view, you know, what is now up and down on that is what used to be left and right because you've rotated it still works the right. Smart. Yeah. Like, so that has not changed from the first, you know, generation. But, you know, the shape of this thing is so weird. When you see it in photos, you think that the photo has been skewed somehow because the shape just looks off. You know, it's not quite a circle. It's not quite a square. It's certainly not a square with rounded corners. You know, it's a squircle. It's just a weird shape. It just looks off.
I kind of like it though. When in real life, I like it. Does it bug you, the shape?
I just, every time I look at it, it looks like the nose on a panda. That's what it looks like.
Well, you know, there's all sorts of art and design. And I talked to my friend Craig Severson, who worked at IDEO and Frog Design. I mean, this guy really knows this stuff.
Okay,
and,
what do you say about that?
Well, I haven't asked about the squircle, but he does say that when you design stuff, you have to pay attention to little things like off-center and symmetry and stuff that can really make unconscious resonances in the viewer's brain, and it may be that this is a little off in its design. I haven't noticed that.
There's something.
It might be you that's off.
Oh, I'm absolutely off. But there, yeah.
No, now I'm going to see it. Now that you've said it, I'm going to see it. I know I am.
Well,
thanks.
It doesn't detract from the functionality of the device.
Let's talk a little bit. So we like the UI. On the device. Yep. I think it's very usable. Yeah, it goes off the screen, which is a little disconcerting, but at least it's big text and I can read it.
So we should at least point out the one thing that's missing here, hardware-wise, and actually, I guess, firmware-wise, however you want to describe the software on the device. You know what's still missing here, and this is actually a big problem for a lot of people, is EQ.
No EQ. Yeah, the iPods had that almost, I think, from day one.
Probably from day one, yeah.
I never use it. You think that's people want that, huh?
I know they do because I've gotten several emails about it already. And
interesting.
I don't know. You know, personally, me with EQ, I go in there and I play with it, and then I just end up putting it back to the
Me too.
The fault, typically.
But if you have headphones that need to be tweaked, or if you've got golden ears, you and I, we've already acknowledged, do not have golden ears. I guess you might want that.
Right. Right. So I'm just going to throw that out because, you know, that's one of those ones that I've certainly gotten enough either questions or complaints about. So there is no EQ.
It plays back the usual formats, yes?
Yeah.
Still not plays for sure, though.
Right, right. And by the way, my understanding is that's never going to happen. So
okay.
Give it up. Which I think is too bad.
But it does do these unprotected MP3s, which is really nice. Not only the ones you make, but they're selling them.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Still has a radio, which I like.
Yep.
Can it record?
No.
No. All right.
No, and it doesn't work as a flat, like a
drive.
A USB hard drive. Yeah.
Okay.
Although I've seen there's already a hack out for the second generation that will allow it to work in that fashion. But, you know, I think Dave Calton mentioned this last year when we talked about this. You know, they obviously do a lot of market research, and there's a really small percentage of people that need some of this functionality that we're complaining about. On the other hand, I think when the market leader offers this stuff, and yeah, you know, maybe in some ways it's just a bullet point on a PowerPoint, you know, check off list or whatever, but I don't know. You know, it seems like, allowing this thing to work as a drive would be nice, even if 99% of the users never use it.
It is handy.
Plus, who are the people, who bought Zunes in the last year? I mean, we're talking about early adopters as is here. So these are fairly technical people. They may be the ones, you know, who need that kind of functionality. I think you got to play to the user base.
Easy enough thing to do. I mean,
yep.
It doesn't take a lot of... Although I noticed they're taking it out of the latest iPods, so it might be the music.
Oh, are they?
Yeah, well, iTouch doesn't have it.
Yeah, so we'll get onto the PC software in a moment, but I mean, clearly one of the deals with the new Zune is they want to make this stupid simple. So you plug this thing into your computer, it doesn't pop up in Explorer, you know, you don't...
That's probably what it is.
I'm sure this is part of a simplification process.
I bet you anything.
Yeah, and I would say across the board, with the exception of the device software, which... is really just a nice evolution of what came before, because frankly, the software that was on the device last year was fine. They've evolved that because they only needed to evolve it. Virtually everything else associated with the Zune, including the hardware, is a complete rethinking, you know, a revolution, brand new from the ground up. And I think a lot of it was designed for that, you know, I don't want to call it stupid simple, but you know, that super simple
right
approach, you know.
How it should be, frankly. I mean,
yeah, it's a fine line. I mean, they've certainly dropped some functionality here and there in their bid to oversimplify things, but yeah, I think it's the better approach. If you want to hit a mass market, make it simple, you know, make it attractive, you know, and make sure it works all the time. So I this device to me is very nice.
As long as we're talking about software, let's talk internal software. I do want to get to the desktop because the desktop's really interesting. Yeah. But they have changed squirting.
Yes, yes, they have.
The squirting now is not as highly protected.
Right. It's unprotected squirting.
Oh, my goodness.
Let's move on, shall we?
It's good for podcasters, though, because it means now you can share a podcast with somebody else who has a Zune, and maybe they'll even be more Zune owners now. And
yes.
It doesn't put protection on it, which I like.
Right, right.
And the social has, to some degree, moved online. I would say that, now the software social, it recognizes... you put your plays up on the internet now, and so
it's a
forth.
Bit more social than it was last year. I mean, if the social interaction of this device is you and someone else who has one, you're going to be the loneliest guy on earth because
nobody has them.
You know, I mean, in you know, probably 9 months or so of using this thing around the world,
not even once. No, that's going to change. I really do think this is a product that is much, much better.
Yeah.
Your social is now mostly online, although you can still squirt.
You're free to squirt.
Feel free to get social with your neighbor. I'm trying to think of some other stuff before we head to the software, because the desktop software is much, much improved.
Okay, so wireless sync.
Oh, that's what I want to ask about. Wi-Fi,
And really well done wireless
sync. I haven't tried it, so that works pretty well.
Yeah, it does.
So what happens? You get in the vicinity of your machine, it recognizes it, and it starts?
No, well, it depends. No, not like that. So in other words, if you're just walking around with the device in your hand or it's not attached to anything, it's not going to just wireless sync because this is a battery intensive operation.
Got it.
You can go into the menu and force a sync. Typically, you know, the goal there should be there isn't much to sync, right? You don't want to do a lot of, you don't want to sync the entire 8 gigabytes.
Yeah, only the first time do you fill it up. After that, you're only changing a few
After things. That. Yeah, I think that would be the goal. Maybe you have some new podcasts to download, that kind of thing.
Right.
Okay, so that should work fine. Where wireless sync makes more sense is maybe you have a docking station on your desk, and it's not anywhere near your computer. It's in the other room or something like that.
Or you have a laptop or something. Yeah.
Yeah, that would work too. But as long as the thing is powered and it's within, you know, 30 feet or whatever your wireless range is, it will sync wirelessly while powered.
See, that's goofy. To me, that seemed goofy because the only way it got powered is by hooking it up to my computer.
Well, but look at how the Well, okay, but there, think about the different ways that that could work, right? There are people that have sort of charging stations now by the door, right, where they plug in their... You could do that. I have been testing this. Now, of course, it doesn't work on the flash devices, but I've been testing it with the 30 gig unit, and I'll test... I can't wait to test it with the 80 gig when that comes. But, you know, I have an AV pack. I've got it connected to my HDTV. And when you plug that in to play content over the TV from the Zune, you could basically just leave that Zune out there as a remote device, and then it will sync because it's plugged in.
You don't have to,
right?
It becomes like an Apple TV.
Absolutely. Now, you could do the same thing with an iPod, except that that won't sync.
Doesn't do it wirelessly.
Right.
So this way, it will... So it is just like an Apple TV. It syncs wirelessly over the network.
It's an Apple TV in your pocket. I don't know why they don't market it like that.
It's better than an Apple TV because it's got more... The 80 has more storage, twice the storage. So, this is very interesting. All right,
yeah, so that's a very cool
and,
use.
And you were able to upgrade the firmware on your 30 to do everything that the new ones do?
Just about. So it's sort of an esoteric list, or a kind of a non-obvious list of things that the 30 doesn't do. And I'm not going to remember all of them off the top of my head. So a lot of the stuff it doesn't do is just chipset related. It's a limitation of whatever chips they put in there a year ago. So, for example, I know that the new devices support the latest WPA wireless security standard.
Oh, wow.
The 30 does not.
Can't.
So if you have a... if you have WPA 2 installed on your router as the only available security for wireless, it won't work.
Right.
You know, and this is something by the way, the PlayStation 3 doesn't work with WPA too. So you can do a mixed mode or, you know, push it down to whatever the next one down is.
Get the Buffalo, or there's a Buffalo that does weapon WPA.
Yeah. The one I have is, I have a D-Link that does mixed mode. So if you have WPA, we'll use that. If you don't, it will do whatever WPA, I guess it is. So that's one of the things. This isn't related to sync in any way, but you know, the 30 gig device can only work with video that's 320 by 240. So if you want to push video onto the 30 gig, it will actually have to transcode it first, copy it to the smaller format, and then push it onto the device.
Now, this is a very cool feature of the new ones. It no longer does that transcoding.
Exactly. Now, you know, not doing transcoding is nice. Absolutely. One of the limitations of the 4 and the 8 gig flash devices is that they can't do video out. So they're useless in this Apple TV in your pocket scenario, in the sense that they can't output their contents to the TV. You'd need the 80 gig device for that. But that said, you know, these newer devices work more like an iPod in that you can copy, you know, 640 by whatever, you know, 640 by 480 or less, video content onto the device, and it will just go right to the device. You don't have to transcode it. You know, you may want to, by the way, I mean, if you're trying to save space, but you don't have to. So that's a big deal.
Yeah. It also means, again, that you can use it like a TV. Well, not the little ones, but the big one. You'll be able to use like an Apple TV, which is really neat. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm really, really, really...
That's kind of a stealth application I hadn't really thought about. Dock it next to the TV. It doesn't have HDMI. Yeah. What kind of connections? No.
It's just it's component.
It has component or composite?
I believe it's just... What's the lower end?
The lowest is composite.
The RCA, yes. I have the older... I still have the older AV, and I looked in the store, and it looked like it was just composite on the new one as well.
I'm looking at the Zune accessory page, and the Zune cable pack. Yeah, it's composite. That's not too bad. All right. You know, by the way, I want to say mine came with the Zune Premium headphones, which are only $40 and sound fantastic.
Yeah, and by the way, so you did you get that weird little pink loop thing in there?
Yeah, what's that?
Yeah, I asked about that, and
I couldn't figure out what to do with it. It has a little Zune logo on it.
I was laughed at, and was told that there was some big internal debate about whether they should include that in there. But it is a loop that's designed to help you organize your headphones. And if I actually never got a straight answer as to what it is, but my understanding is, I believe that there is a... There's a little latch on the top of the new Zunes, and you can push it through there, and you can leave it connected, and it gives you something to tie your headphones onto.
I'll have to try that.
You'd think there'd be some kind of instructions in the box.
Not only did that, but it's not attached to anything, so it just looks like a little tag.
I said it looked like something that fell off the factory floor and they threw in the box by mistake.
Well, here we got an extra one here. Give it to Paul.
Well, no, like it just fell in the box. Like maybe it fell off a machine or something.
Yeah, it's not attached to anything. It just flops out. I hope I still have mine. I have to look and see if I threw it out. It looks like packaging. Save it. It will attach your. But I like these for $40. These premium headphones sound pretty close to the higher end Edimotics.
Oh, and sure. I could be wrong about this. I believe the premium headphones actually do come with the 80 gig device in the box.
Wow. See that? I'm liking this 80 gig. I'm thinking I might get the 80 gig.
Yeah. No, I want one pretty badly. I'm very interested in this.
I'm liking it. All right. Now we find. Okay. So that's the Zoom. That's the hardware. You know, I have to say it's one step behind the iPods, but there's some neat stuff that doesn't.
In some ways.
You know. Yeah. In design. You're right. It's not fair to say that because in other ways, with like the Wi-Fi syncing, it's.
Well, but hold on a second. Here's one thing. For example, just from a design perspective, absolutely. You know, the one I have here, this device, is a little bit bigger than an iPod Nano.
Little squarer on the corners.
Yep, absolutely. You know, there's no denying that. But so what?
It's functional. You know, no, it's functional.
It's still tiny. It still fits your pocket. And by the way, it looks like it's built like a tank. I mean, it's solid. The back of this thing doesn't scratch when I take it out of my pocket.
Good point.
You know, I actually joked, you know, with Dave Carlton. I was saying, you know, you guys should put a, you guys should make a case that has a Brillo pad on the inside of it so that when you take it in and out of the case, it looks just like an iPod. Because, you know, iPods, like, they scratch just looking
instantly.
At them, you know?
Yeah, instantly.
Yeah, so this thing is it's not scratch-tacular.
And the video is pretty good on, even on the little one. I think the video is watchable.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and I haven't seen it on the 80 gig, but is the 80 gig screen the same as the 30?
I don't have it either, so, it's...
It's a higher res screen, I think, yeah?
No, that's actually, this is the one thing. So the 80 gig screen is almost the size of the screen on the iPod Touch. It's considerably bigger than the iPod Classic screen or the, you know.
Right.
And if you look at it, if you have a 30 gig Zoom, it's, you know, you sort of have an idea of how the size.
Okay.
The limitation and where it falls short of the iPod Touch from just a screen size perspective, because obviously the Touch has other things that are very interesting and innovative, is that it's only 320 by 240, whereas the Touch is 480 by 320, if I'm not mistaken, somewhere in that range. So it's a higher res screen.
Okay,
you know, that may or may not be an issue, and I can't really pass judgment on that yet. You know, the iPod Touch screen is fantastic. It's very high quality. It looks beautiful. It's the type of thing where you're squished into a coach seat on a plane. You can watch movies, no problem. It works wonderfully.
Oh, yeah, I love it.
I suspect that the Zune 80 will work in a similar fashion. And there is some advantage, by the way, to not constantly touching the screen. I mean, I know that sounds like a small thing, but I spend half my life now cleaning the screen on my iPhone.
Well, there's another disadvantage, and I often remind people of this, that with the Touch, you have to take it out and look at it to change songs, to move to the next song, to pause, to turn it up.
Well, the iPod Touch is not a good song music player, you know?
It's a video player,
It's a video player, and that's exactly how I use it. I only put videos on that thing. And but again, like I've been saying all along, I said this about it the second they announced it, and I said it when I saw the thing, and I said it when I reviewed it. I would pay for an 80 gig version of that was three times as thick, so they could fit the battery in the hard drive that we required to make that happen. Why do I couldn't care less that this thing is that thin. I would want it to be a little bigger, you know? I mean, I want the screen to be as big as it can be. I want the storage to be as big as it can be. You know, who cares if it's one iota of an inch thick or however, whatever it is. I mean, I want this, I want storage. I want to put my video collection on there. And that might be something, I think there's a middle ground that, maybe the Zune is striking a sweet spot. I don't have an 80 to say yet. So that's one of those things I'm going to look at when that arrives.
Yep. Yep. Now let's talk about the Zune marketplace, completely reinvented. And I think they've done a nice job. Remember, the competition here is iTunes, which is, that's tough.
Yeah.
But I think they've done a very nice job.
Yeah. So the Zune marketplace, obviously, compared to iTunes, is sort of like, how do I say this? It's like comparing, an independent music store,
right,
or just a standalone music store with Walmart,
right?
You know,
well, they have 3 million songs. That's pretty good.
Yeah. No. This. Well. Right. But I don't know. I don't even know what the music stores are called today. So like Strawbrace is probably gone or whatever.
There are no music stores anymore.
I know. Well, okay. So if there was a Tower Records, let's say,
okay,
conceivably the music selection in a typical Walmart would be the same size or a little bit bigger.
Right.
So the comparison is sort of apt because there's, but yet there's a lot more at Walmart, you know,
right.
There's more going on. So iTunes has a lot more stuff. And if you really do a side-by-side comparison, it's somewhat striking. I mean, how much is going on in iTunes, you know? Right. In fact, it there's a lot of text and pictures, and it's kind of, you know, you really have to look around. There's stuff there, you know, there's lots of stuff, you know. And the obvious things that they're selling that the Zune marketplace is not are TV shows, movies, and audiobooks.
Right.
You know, those are the three big ones. There are other things, you know, they sell ringtones and so forth, or they let you make your own ringtones. There's other things. If you just look at music, you know, it's really interesting. There's sort of a less is more thing going on in the Zune marketplace. And certainly the graphical design of both the PC software and then the online service, the Zune marketplace itself, which, you know, occurs in the same application window, is really nice. You know, this is nice. If Apple had never come out with iTunes and you just saw this thing,
you'd be blown away.
You might think this is something Apple would do.
You'd be blown away. I think it's slick. It's smooth. It is. I think it's done very well. Yeah.
It's everything the other one wasn't. You know, I mean, the first version of Zune Marketplace and the Zune software was absolutely horrific.
Well, it was Urge. It was just a rebranded Urge.
It's a Frankenstein monster. Yeah.
This is clearly written from scratch.
Yes. Now, you lose things when you write stuff from scratch, right? I mean, you lose some good things like complexity. But you also lose some things that might be valuable to you, you know. So hopefully, unlike last year, they'll actually upgrade all of this stuff over time. Yeah. And they've told me that they're going to do that. But of course, they told me that last year too. So
But they're showing their commitment to Zune.
Yeah.
And so I believe them when they say. I mean, obviously, Microsoft is not backing off at all. They're saying no. This is a platform. We're going to make it a platform. Yeah.
So if you give them the benefit of the doubt and say, in many ways, this is sort of like a 1.0 thing because it is the first one they did, you know, from scratch, or it's pretty stunning. I mean, for what it is. I mean, it, within the limitations of, you know, we're just going to sell music. Basically, we're going to also provide access to podcasts. And if you look really hard, you can find some music videos, but you really have to kill yourself to find them. You know, within that limit, you know, sort of subset of what's available in iTunes. They're doing a nice job. You know, they really are. There's a million MP3 songs in there. They do absolutely nothing to make them easy to find. And I think that's too bad because, you know, one of the things that, you know, one of the many, many things that is in iTunes is you can find a link called iTunes Plus and you can just browse that subset of the store that's DRM free music. And I think there's a lot of people that would want to do that. I certainly want to do it. And what you'll see is if you go to certain artists, beautiful artist pages, you know, beautiful big graphics and bio information, photographs, and they'll show you music that they don't even sell if you want. I mean, by default, the list is here are the albums we sell, but you can click a button and see, well, here's everything else, you know.
There's a lot of things. I mean, but understand, it's a mature platform. It's been around for years now.
Well, right. But I mean, the point is, though, but in that list of albums, you depending on the artist, you'll occasionally see, oh, there's a couple. Here's one with a little MP3 logo on it.
Right.
You know?
Oh, you're talking about the Zune store now. The Zune marketplace.
Yeah. You really have to.
No, they need. Really, they need. In fact, my initial impression was, oh, they have 12 unprotected songs.
I know. You know. Well, that's the other thing. You know, you go into the list and they have these. I mean, there's these horrible dead ends. You know.
Right.
On the front page right now, I'm looking at it. There are these lists. You know, top songs, and there are five of them. And there's a little arrow. So clearly, you click on the arrow, and you're going to see more top songs. But right next to it, it says top music videos, and there are five of them.
Right.
And there's no arrow. Apparently, there are five music
videos.
That's
all there are. Yeah.
I mean, that's terrible. And obviously, there are more than five, but there's no link to videos. So you can't even find them. I mean, that's an immaturity.
One hopes they could fix all of that. I mean, that's not.
Yeah. No, I'm just trying to say that, you know, I think they're hitting the high points. My hope is that they will evolve this thing very quickly and not wait several months. I mean, I hope we see things every couple of months and, you know, interface tweaks and all that stuff. So, but you know, just coming out of the box like this, it's really attractive. I mean, and I've said this maybe too many times, but it makes iTunes look like, you know, DB3 Plus on DOS. I mean, a big list of text, you know, by comparison. And this is just really attractive. They did a nice job with this.
And the point I was making about the wrong thing, but in terms of iTunes functionality, I mean, there's a lot richer stuff in there, and it's because it's been around a long time.
Oh, absolutely. But again, you have to kind of know where to look. I mean,
right.
There's no doubt about it. There's so much more available there. But you have to do a lot of digging. And one thing I think that I still don't think that either of these services does a good job of helping people find new music per se. But I think that the Zune software, the Zune marketplace specifically, has much better lists of here's stuff that's similar. They have lists of here are the artists that influenced this artist. Here are the artists that were influenced by this artist.
Right.
Here's the list of the music.
See, I like that. That gives you serendipity. That gives you a browsability.
Right. Now, on the iTunes store, what you get is a very short list. I think it's just five links.
Right.
That says, people who bought this also bought this.
Right. And it doesn't usually work very well.
That's interesting. But come on, I buy instrumental music. I buy hard rock music. Knowing what else I bought is not going to help you understand what's like this group. That's a key thing
you have to solve, I think, in an online music store is give it the browsability of a regular record store. And I think they've taken some good steps in that direction. It feels good. I was very impressed. And it's got subscriptions.
It's great. I mean, it's limited, but it's great. If this is the starting point, this is great. I think it's really neat.
I think our consensus is that this Zune update is significant. It really is a big deal.
We have spent a considerable amount of time in this podcast over the past year doing nothing but making fun of Zune, right?
Yep. I feel a little bad about that, to be honest, because now they've shown that this isn't...
They deserved it.
Okay.
They absolutely deserved it.
I don't feel so bad now. Okay.
What they did last year was ludicrous. I don't know what to compare this to. This is so unexpectedly good.
Yeah.
And the other thing that makes this really interesting to me is, I know people at Microsoft. I have talked to them over the past, several months, about the Zune, and I've talked to guys, not on the Zune team who have seen it, and they've all kind of said the same thing to me. It's better than it was, but don't get too excited. They're still kind of behind, and I don't know.
Really?
And then the thing comes out, and you're like, oh, my God, look at this. This is nice. I mean, it's in sharp contrast to last year when there was all this hype, and then the actual product was...
Maybe they've learned underplay, undersell.
Under promise, over deliver.
Now, I have to say, the big issue is it's going to take more than just something that's a little bit better to beat the iPod. You really have to...
You've got to kick the
iPod's butt if you want to have a chance.
It's as true, when you think about Windows and, Linux or Mac OS X
as it is with the
iPod. Yeah, absolutely.
Yep.
Right. So as good as this is, the truth is I can't walk into a Best Buy or a Tweeter or wherever and say, all right, give me the Alpine that has Zune connectivity.
Not yet.
So I can put that in my car. There's no such thing as far as I know.
Yeah.
And if there is, there's only one, and there are 200 of them for the iPod.
Right,
I like being able to, I like the idea of buying videos if I want to. Maybe I'm on the road and I've gone through all the movies I have, and I want to spend $10 and watch something on the flight home. I can't do that with the Zune.
So they don't sell limitations. They have video podcasts, but they don't sell any commercial.
So they have video podcasts. They have music videos. Apparently, again, like I said, I have a hard time finding them, but I guess they're in there somewhere. What I was told when they briefed me about this a couple of months ago was that they are in negotiations with the TV industry to do something different than what's been offered so far with TV shows. And my understanding of that is probably be some kind of a subscription service, and that what they're shooting for are two options. One which would be you could actually subscribe to TV shows for free, but there are advertisements that you can't skip over, or you can pay like you do now when you buy them, but not as much per episode.
They've already got the infrastructure with Xbox Live. It's not that hard to
make it happen,
I would think.
So in other words, but I think what they're trying to do is not just do what's already out there. They want to do something different and something that's better for everybody. So okay. I guess we'll see. It's a gaping hole. There's no doubt about it. And by the way, I think for a large portion of the potential you know, owners out there, not having audiobook support is a big hole as well. And what I've read is that they're still in negotiations with Audible, and that could happen,
very quickly. I have to say that was one of the first, it's funny, it's one of the very first things I did.
Mm-hmm. Try to sync an audio.
Yeah. And then I went to Audible to see if it was part of their device center.
I did the same thing. I was just doing that today. And I don't know. I was going to ask you. I mean, I guess the opportunity there would be to, I guess you could download the version where you burn it to CD and then rip it back. Yeah. And I guess you could do that.
You won't have a lot of functionality. Like the real key on that is the ability to stop a book and go back to where you were before and all that.
I don't. Plus, anytime you introduce those extra steps, you're talking about something that no one's ever going to do anyway. So. Right.
Well, maybe someday. Hey, while we're talking about that, let's talk about our Audible pick of the week. Audible is a sponsor of this podcast, all the Twit podcasts, and we're really happy to have them. It's audible.com/windows if you'd like to sign up and get a free book. And we'd like to recommend books that you might want to listen to. And I guess Paul found a new one he's all excited about.
I'm all a Twitter.
He's all a Twitter about.
It's called The 4-Hour Work Week. You can see why I would be attracted to this. I'm currently on a 22-hour work day.
Yeah.
As a workaholic of sorts, I'm always trying to find balance, you know, between work and you know, family and personal time and all that stuff. Yeah. So, yeah, Timothy Ferris is the author. This is a guy who I believe came into technology from the health industry and, you know, like so many young guys, immediately latched onto the whole BlackBerry, Outlook, email all day, Facebook, instant messaging, you know, did all that stuff. And then kind of sat back and said, what the heck am I doing with my life? All I'm doing is, you know, spending my time managing all this technology. This is ridiculous. And it's funny because, you know, as you and I were talking about earlier, I mean, in my own life, this is something I consider personally important. I mean, you want to try to, you know, strike this balance. And when you write about technology, especially, it's very easy to go over the top with things. And I always try to step back and say, well, how would, you know, okay, so I have all this crazy stuff in my house, but most people don't. So how would, you know, what's the best way to do this? And what's the best way to do this? And you know, keeping all this stuff in focus is very important. So a lot of what he is recommending is just not feasible for me personally because of what I do for a living and so forth. So
well, like, what did he say to?
Well, one of his recommendations,
and Merlin Mann is a big fan of this as well.
Right. So no, I mean, this organizational stuff is always very interesting to me. So one of his recommendations, and you'll see immediately why this will never work for me, is you should only check your email twice a day. Yeah. Well, no, but we're talking normal people here, but,
it's a very good idea. I wish I could do it
right before lunch, and then an hour before the end of your work.
Love to do that. Yeah.
I would love to be able to do that. You know, I get over 100 emails, legitimate emails a day, and then hundreds of, you know, spam messages and so forth. That's not possible for someone like me, you know.
Right.
But one of the other things he does, and this has been something that's come up a lot lately, and this is something I sort of arrived at independently as it was, you know, may recall several months ago, started managing all my email on the web and talking about cloud computing and all this stuff. And one of the sort of stress relievers for someone like me, especially, but for anybody really, is, you know, you have all this email sitting there and it's like a weight on your back, you know. And I get a lot of reader email. And one of the realities of my life is that I just can't answer all of it. And I get a lot of people who write me back and say, wow, I can't believe how quickly you got back to me. But I also have a lot of people who say, wow, you're obviously not even a real person because you've never responded to my email.
I get both. Isn't that funny? I get both.
It's
too.
It's hard, you know, and it's just an unfortunate reality. There's only so many hours in the day. And one of his recommendations is that you should process email immediately. And I don't quite do that, but I do believe in clearing out the inbox every day. And I don't quite get there, but I almost get there. And frankly, you know, if I've got email, you know, unfortunately, usually from readers by this point, that's been sitting in my inbox for 2 weeks, you know, I get 100 emails a day. I'm not going to get back to that. It's just, that's just the reality. And I've recommended to people who don't hear back from me quickly, it's absolutely okay.
Try again.
In my case, to try again. Right. Yeah. I mean, don't feel bad about that. I mean, don't spam mail me, obviously. Because that's going to get you nowhere. But, you know, but if it's important and I'm not getting back to you, please, you know, you can write back. That's fine.
I would say the same thing. Yeah.
But again, with the complete understanding that I am atypical and in a very special situation. Some of his advice, I think, are very, I think they're very interesting for just for people, because, you know, we're a society in a, not just in America, but around the world, where we're our faces in our phone all day long. You're talking to people, instant messaging, emailing, and basically what he's saying is that this actually is not productive. And, some of his stuff is, he says, look, you can sit there on email all day, but I can get more done making a single phone call. Sometimes all it takes is walk into someone's office and say, hi, here I am. This is who I am. Let's get this done, whatever it might be. Right. And you just get it done, you know. And to me, this is very interesting. So if you're one of those guys, it doesn't matter what, if you're into the tech industry or not, and you're trying to use technology to make your life more productive, you may need to take a step back. And I think this is an interesting approach. It may be a little, very far on one edge of the scale, I guess. But I mean, even if you just implement a few of these things, I think it's interesting. So
you just won me over. I just bought the book. I'm going to be listening to it.
He's a cool guy. I mean, he's one of the, and by the
it's
way,
a neat
you know,
story.
The other aspect, yeah. And he has his own personal story in there and all that. And of course, this is a guy who loves to travel. So I mean, there's a part of that in there that I enjoy personally, but, this is one of those live life to the fullest things. Right. You know, it's like, well, I could be, sitting in an office all day, but I don't know. I work at home. So for me, it's like, as my dad said to me one time, visited from Pennsylvania, he said, explain to me why you don't live on a lake somewhere in the middle of nowhere. Exactly.
Because you could live anywhere.
Yeah. I mean, and there were reasons actually for that, but, I can travel and be away for a long time and still get work done. Again, you don't want to, we went to France in August and you don't want to go to France and spend the entire time working, but I can't go to France for a month and not work. So
right.
There's a balance you need to strike. Anyway,
right.
I think that this is a very interesting part of this puzzle in life of finding the balance between, things that actually do make you more productive and then the things you do to try to make yourself more productive, but all you're really doing is giving yourself more work to do.
Here's an interesting story. He teaches this course at Princeton. He's only 28.
I know, he's a young guy.
And he's been teaching.
I hate people that figure stuff out before me, the bastard. But
he's probably miserable in his personal life. I'm sure there's.
No, he looks like one of those, self help guru types. He's in really good shape.
I hate him.
Yeah. He's one of those. Really
Kill
successful.
Your job and design a life. The book is The 4-Hour Work Week. Jerk. Escape 9-to-5, live anywhere, and join the new rich. Actually, people are singing its praises. I just ordered. I can't wait to listen to it. Thank you for the recommendation. Timothy Ferris is the author. And you can get it, by the way, for free by joining audible.com, a great source of audiobooks. Talk about a way of using your time efficiently. I mean, anytime you're in the car or working out or anything where you can't use your hands, listening to a book is such a great thing. And Paul and I both are big Audible listeners. We really recommend you take a look at it. 45,000 titles, works on many, many, many portable platforms. Not the Zune yet.
The Zune. We'll get there.
We'll get there. I listen to it on my iPhone. Actually, I don't use the iPhone as a phone anymore. It's a portable book device. Audible.com/windows. By the way, they're having a big 20 or a half price sale right now through the 20th.
I saw that today. Yeah.
Yeah. In fact, this is one of the half price books. So 1,000 plus unabridged titles at half price, but you only have a few days to take advantage of that. Audible.com. We thank them for their support of Windows Weekly.
It's funny. I did the same thing you did, which was I went to Audible today to find out about the Zune. And
bummed me out.
Yeah. I looked it up online.
I have plenty of devices I can listen to audiobooks on. And in fact, I've got Audible books in a lot of, both my regular iPod and my iPhone. But what I was thinking of doing with the Zune, since I don't need another music player, is making it kind of a podcast, audiobook, spoken word thing. Because it's only a 4 gig, but that's plenty for spoken word.
Oh, yeah.
That's a ton.
I mean, those files are really small.
And I have to I just really want to underscore this. Thank Microsoft for finally supporting podcasting. I can't tell you
not,
how important.
And not calling it Zunecast or something.
I could have lived with Zunecast, but it's great that it's a podcast. It just spreads the word that this exists. It doesn't require an iPod. It's in the Zune marketplace. They've got featured podcasts. I mean, thank goodness. This could be a big deal.
I actually should tell you, that the podcast collection that they have online, whatever it is, has in fact improved since I've been looking at it, because obviously one of the first things I did was type in Paul Theroux and, does my podcast come up? And it didn't. And then the day I actually had written in my review, Mine isn't in there, but I'm sure it will be. It was a day later. There it was.
Yeah. It'll be featured soon, I'm sure. Well, I was told by somebody, and I guess they got it wrong, that we were included on the Zune. There's two podcasts included on the Zune, both of them from mainstream sources, which a little bit disappoints me. KEXP and
SNBC, and, right?
NPR. It's This American Life. Actually, it's APR. But This American Life is a great show, a great podcast. But I kind of had hoped that Windows Weekly would have been included as one of the ones that it came with. It should have.
I have a bizarre relationship with these people.
Well, it's also pretty techy. And I think they probably wanted to put mainstream stuff on there.
Yeah. I mean, they obviously want mainstream right across the board. I mean, that's what they're pushing, you know, this time with, you know, advertising and marketing and so forth. So,
yeah,
that makes sense.
I understand that. I'm hurt. Makes sense. I'm brokenhearted. But I'm just, no, I'm not. I am thrilled, though. I think this is very, very important.
We're
hurt, brokenhearted, and thrilled. We'll get them.
I really like the device. And I don't hold this against them.
No. No, we wouldn't do that. Now, there's so many other things to talk about, but, you know, we really don't have a whole lot more time. Do you want to?
We don't.
Let's get to our software pick of the week. What do you say?
We skipped over like 30 things, didn't we?
We have so many things. We want to talk about high quality video on your Xbox 360. We want to talk about the HP Smart Server, which is out, the Windows Home Server. We wanted to talk about VMware Fusion. We wanted to talk about, I really wanted to talk about your article, Welcome Leopard Switchers. But you know what? We'll just save this for next week. What do you say?
Yep. Fine.
Can you do that? I hate to do it, but this really was the Zune episode, and I think that
who knew
it needed.
We could talk this much about this. There's more to say about the Zune. That's what's amazing. I mean, it really is good stuff.
We needed to say it, and I'm we're just very glad that they've. You know what? Microsoft always does this. It's almost a joke. First generation Microsoft products. By the time they've got two or three generations out, they're world beaters. And frankly, the third generation, if this is the second generation Zune, I'm Apple, I'd be worried about the third generation Zune. I'd really start worrying.
I would say that even what they've done now is going to be enough to show something.
They'll get market share.
You're right. Well, somebody also made the comparison, the Xbox and the Zune. It's interesting, the first version's, okay. And then the second version, like, woo.
Stand back.
Look at that.
Actually, that shows that Microsoft's improved that cycle because it used to take three versions.
Sure.
Or more. Windows 1.0, Windows 3.0, not so good. Windows 3.1, whoa. Windows 95, And that's been true all across the board. So you have a pick for us, a software pick.
I do. I'm just throwing this one out as a semi-obvious one. But if you're not aware of this, Microsoft released what I'm calling the Windows Live Suite. Microsoft doesn't actually know what to call this, so they're just kind of calling it Windows Live, even though there's a lot more to Windows Live. What this is a set of software and services that you can download in a single installer and install altogether or just install parts of it. It's all free and much of it is very high quality. I haven't written a review of the final version yet because one of the problems I'm having these days is that Microsoft all of a sudden is on this, machine gun release cycle where they've got all this stuff coming out. So the Zune and Response Point Phone and the server stuff and now the Windows Live and OneCare is coming out today. As we record this on Thursday, and there's just a lot of stuff. So Windows Live Suite, what it is Windows Live Mail, the mail client, Messenger 8.5, Windows Live Photo Gallery, which is absolutely fantastic and reason enough just to look at this, photo management and editing, and basically a more advanced version of the tool that shipped in Windows Vista, but this time it works in both XP and Vista, so... really nice tool. Windows Live Writer, which works with a variety of blog services online.
I'm loving this. I think this is an incredible product.
Really new tool.
Yeah, I wrote a review of the last beta a month ago, but the new one is even better.
Yeah, it's really, really nice.
Yeah.
And then, updated versions of the toolbar and some of the services like MSN Spaces has been updated and so forth. But there's a family safety tool, which has a lot of that parental control type stuff for the computers on your home network. So if you want to prevent your kids from, hitting adult websites or whatever, there's all that functionality built in. So absolutely worth checking out. And a very simple URL. It's just www.windowslive.com.
And when you install any one of them, it will offer you all the rest of them so you can see what everything is.
You can check off the ones you want on the web and it will actually, you know, sort of preload the application with those, but you can mix and match as you will. So,
yeah, I use Windows Live Writer a lot. I really like it. Yeah. All right. So let's wrap this puppy up. We have lots more to talk about. We'll just have to do this again next week if you can. It's Thanksgiving, so what we record? We'll record Wednesday, and we'll just put it out the day after Thanksgiving, and everybody will be stuffed and ready for a Windows Weekly. How about that?
Sounds like a plan.
All right. Paul Theroux, great to talk to you.
Cheers, sir.
And thank you, everybody, for joining us. We'll see you next week on Windows Weekly.